You're listening to the C Word Radio, the podcast where we ask, what the f*** does young cancer survivorship mean? With me, Helen King, and guests. Subscribe and rate on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Welcome back to the C Word Radio. I am so glad to have you here. Today's episode, we will continue our quest to try and figure out what on earth young cancer survivorship means or looks like, or what on earth we are meant to be doing in this post-treatment life, actually, let alone this weird COVID world. It seems to me that nearly everyone, or so many people that I follow, they're in the States and Australia and the UK, are getting COVID. So I hope you are all keeping safe and healthy. I know that, yeah, it's a pretty worrying time. I feel like I don't want to get COVID. And I was talking about this with an upcoming guest, actually, and we were saying that I think when you've been through something like cancer, where it's had this major impact on your life, and you have spent time clawing back your mental, emotional, and physical health, the thought of getting something like COVID, which could, again, really impact you long term, really is not appealing. So stay safe out there, my lovely people. It is indeed a very strange time we are living in. And I know I've said that so many times. So let's distract ourselves with another amazing story. Before we leap into today's episode, I have a small request. If you have not already, can you please subscribe to The C Word on Good Pods? I will provide a link in the show notes, or if you head over to Instagram or Facebook, you can find all my links on my profile. Good Pods is one of my favorite podcast apps at the moment. And I promise this is not an ad. I'm not being paid to say this. Good Pods is this fantastic app where you can discover lots of different podcasts, indie podcasts or podcasts made from some of the big studios. It's really cool. And what I like about it is you can get quite interactive. So if you follow me on the C Word, you can leave comments on episodes you like and we can have a discussion, which I think would be really cool. Could start a group and we can chat away about some of the episodes in there. So please follow me. I would be so appreciative, because the other thing is that when you follow me on Good Pods, it means that other people can discover the podcast. My guest today is Vicky Pallow, who was diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2016 when she was just 29. Like so many of us, once Vicky had finished treatment, she was left trying to figure out how she could mentally live well when she had the fear of relapse. Her body had changed. She was potentially infertile, the loss of employment, finances, and the list goes on, as we all know. A wee warning that this episode does have a few swear words in it. So if you're not into swearing or you've got wee ones in the room, maybe pop on said headphones. And we do talk about infertility. So if that is a sensitive topic for you, just proceed with caution. This is Vicky's story.
When I was diagnosed, I was 29. I'd been married for 6 months and it was completely out of the blue. I had no real symptoms, not in the sort of traditional sense. The only symptom I had was a lump that came up in my neck. And by that point, I went and got all the diagnosis tests and everything, thinking, oh, it's fine. I'm 29, but young, fit and healthy. The lump's in my neck, it's not in my breast. So it'll be fine. It'll just be virus or something. And it wasn't. It was stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And by that point, I was a little, you prepare yourself a little bit when you go through more than one test and they don't know what it is, but it was still a complete, like you explained, it's a bomb that went off in the middle of my world. And it wasn't just cancer. It was the fact that there was, yes, there was cancer in my body, but cancer was also then impacting my fertility. The treatment that I needed to stay alive was potentially going to leave me infertile. My relationships, as I say, I'd only been married 6 months, and we had been together longer than that, but it was very much we were preparing for a honeymoon. We weren't preparing for me to lose my job, us to go into a relatively heavy medical situation. The differences in work. So I was a contractor, I was a FIFO contractor, and I couldn't work, so I couldn't get paid. All these things that you don't really see on the cancer TV stuff, or God love them. Like I had known elderly friends and family who had been diagnosed with cancer as well, but they were in a very different stage of their life. So those sorts of lifestyle impacts never really came up in conversation because it wasn't for them at that stage. So when I was diagnosed, yes, medically, obviously, it was a massive shock, but also emotionally, mentally, psychosocially, financially, all those sorts of things that you just don't hear about and you don't think about. And then you go into treatment and you do everything you can. You go into survival mode, you keep your head down, your bum up, and you just do what you got to do to get through that bit. I'll be honest, like I remember bits of it, but a lot of it is blur. It's just literally that, okay, one appointment, what's my next appointment? What's my next blood test? When's my next chemo? And you do just get a little bit on that sort of medical conveyor belt of getting through. Mm. And I was fortunate enough to have some really great friends and family around to support me, but also I did have a wonderful, she is a Reiki therapist, but also does, we have almost like a counselling coaching session beforehand. So I had mental health support throughout that as well, which was, I believe, the thing that got me through. It changed my experience massively in that respect. So then after the survival stage, if you will, through the treatment, through the diagnosis, through the treatment, I was very gratefully declared in remission. Mm. And essentially by my oncologist, I had a great oncology team. My oncologist said, you're in remission. This is fantastic. You can go live your life now. Bye. And I'm like, great. That's so awesome. I love you. When do I see you again? And he's like, no, come back in 3 months' time. So I'm like, okay, so what do I do for the next 3 months? And he's like, go back to normal. I said, well, what about you, mate? I'm not feeling very normal. But I did. I went back to work. I flew back to work. As I say, as a FIFO worker, I was bald. I was sticking on false eyelashes at 3 a.m. in the morning before my shift. And I realized, it took me a long time to realize, as I say, I'm a few years out now. So this is the benefit of time and my own recovery that has brought me to this stage. But I realized there was absolutely, there was nothing. There was nothing in survivorship. There was no guidance. There was no support. There was no, it's okay if you don't feel okay. It was more, tell us if you have any side effects. I had neuropathy in my fingers, so keep an eye on that. Tell us about that. You know, and to be fair to my oncology team, that's their job to, you know, fix me up and send me on my way. Thank you very much. I've done a very good job. And yes, they have. So I'm very mindful of the fact that is, you know, not their area of expertise and nor do I expect it to be. But there is a massive side of survivorship, which I'm sort of, I guess the first 12 to 24 months are the biggest roller coaster, because the way I describe it to people is when you're going through chemo or radio or whatever treatment you are going through, your brain almost goes on pause. It stops everything from coming in and it just focuses on surviving. It just focuses on whatever it needs to do that day to get through that day. And when you are then taken off that survival mode, i.e. you have survived, you have gone into remission or NED, or you are living with active cancer, actively living with cancer, that's when the pause button comes off, but nothing has stopped in that time. It's just been waiting. And then it all comes through. So I remember saying to friends and family, I don't know why I feel like this. I'm so happy. I'm so over the moon. I am literally the most grateful in the world that I'm still here. So why do I feel confused? Why am I sad? Why am I crying in the car? What's happening here? Because it's not that I'm sad. I'm terrified about my fertility. I feel like I'm a different person. My whole identity has changed. I don't know how to describe that. And I don't even know where to start. So I think, and the further out I get and the more I find young adult cancer patients, because again, we're difficult to find. We're spread across, part of the nature of the beast. We're young, we're mobile, we move. We are often working, so we're not often in support groups. Or if we do go support groups, God love you, Brian, but you're in there with 70-year-old Brian and 60-year-old Maureen. And they're beautiful and we love them, but they don't understand the fact that I'm terrified about my fertility and my husband of 6 months and being able to pay a mortgage that I've just bought a house on and I don't have a career. Yeah. they are in a very different stage, and they're lovely and they're very supportive, but they were not the young adult cancer patients I was looking for. So survivorship in itself is a difficult beast. Connecting a community of young adults who, when you meet them and they go, oh my God, me too. I felt like that. I thought I was the only one. I was so confused. And every young adult I have met has said exactly the same thing. And I'm like, we need to find a way. There's not going to be one size fits all because cancer doesn't work like that. But I believe that even different diagnoses, there's shared survivorship. All the cancer friends I've met, bar one or two, have had completely different diagnoses to me, completely different cancers, completely different treatments, completely different prognosis and places in the world and all that kind of stuff. But when you get to the survivorship stage, we're all dealing with the same topics, different variations, not everybody, of course, but they're emotional, they're mental, they're social, they're how do I explain to my friends that I'm not the same person that I was beforehand? I still love them, but maybe I don't want to do that anymore. Maybe I want to try this. And they're saying, this is weird. You've changed. Why aren't you going back to the way you were? And you're trying to explain to often people in their 20s or 30s who gratefully have never experienced a life-changing event of this magnitude, that your life has changed, but you're still the same person.
Yeah.
So survivorship is, it's big and it's not talked about enough.
It's not at all. And it really amazes me because another woman, one of my guests that I spoke to recently, had thyroid cancer and talked about all that same stuff. And it occurred to me, and I've had this realization several times over the past 3 years, that it really doesn't matter what the cancer is. When we're younger, we often have this shared experience. You've hit all of those things, is that we're in a different life stage. There are different things that we're worried about. And it's just, it's different, you know, it really is. It's totally different.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
I often I've written a few pieces and I refer to it as diagnosis human. Yes, we were diagnosed differently, but we are all human and we're all now learning to live again in a new life after cancer. As much as you don't have to live in it anymore, i.e. you don't have to go for treatment every day or all that kind of stuff, you still have to live with it as part of your experience. And it's so individual, but also I do believe that there are ways of processing cancer and processing it as part of your story, as opposed to living with that label or that identity that so much of the world puts on cancer patients, whether it's warrior or survivor or whatever language or whatever label that they're talking about. Sometimes we don't feel like that. We always want to say back to them, actually, I don't have any choice in this. I did not. Yes, I am a survivor. And yes, I absolutely fought with everything in my might, but I don't call chemo poison. I call chemo medicine. Because it saved my life and that changed the experience for me. There are so many things that we can do with the experience of cancer to change how we perceive it and how we choose to integrate that into our life moving forward. But it's really difficult to know where to start when, I don't know, we don't know how to move forward. We don't know what to do next because everything has changed. Nothing looks the same anymore. Everyone around you is like, oh, thank God that's over. Now we can move on and go back to normal.
Yeah.
And you're standing there going, I feel like I'm on a different planet.
Yeah. It's like, I messed up, man. I know. I'm not moving on from anything.
It's hard.
I know. And it's really funny because I've been, so many of the things that you've been saying, I was like, yep. Because even the fact that I had been with my partner for 6 months before this happened, we had to face infertility together or fertility preservation, being a younger person trying to get my career re-going after having an episode of burnout. Like, there were all of these things that were going on. And I'm 3 years post-diagnosis and it's still hard some days. I had no idea. I had no idea, like, how was I meant to heal this body? No one was telling me how. All it was, eat a good diet and exercise. And it's like, I'm tired. I'm really tired. You know? And eat a proper diet. It's like, I can't cook for myself. I'm just everything changed. And I think that there was such a lack of knowing where to go. I just wasn't anchored into anything. And you're trying desperately to get back into some sort of normality. But yeah, nothing is the same. I went back to work too early and then realized I couldn't work full time anymore. I still can't work full time. That's not spoken about very much. That a lot of us actually cannot work to a full capacity for quite some time, if ever, after a cancer diagnosis, and which is really tough when you're younger, because you're right, you've got mortgages, you might have had aspirations for, you know, for certain things, and then all of a sudden that's not there anymore, and you think, who the hell am I?
You know? Because it's a huge part of your identity when you're, particularly in your younger years, you're formulating that identity still. You're still not your full person yet, which is beautiful in itself, and it's a great opportunity. But like you say, you just started working and you've become a part of your career, or you've started your career, you've just finished your studies, you're ready to get started. And then all of a sudden that has changed from cancer, or the cancer experience has changed that. And you have to re-identify with yourself around that and come to terms with the fact that looks different now. Like you're saying, for you, it means that full-time work isn't an opportunity anymore, but you, in your mind, had based your future on full-time work and what that looked like and what income that bought, or what status that bought, or what part of identity that was for you. And that's just one example. And when we're talking about cancer diagnosis, that's one of 10, and that's been generous that it's only 10, you know, aspects of our lifestyle that we have to reintegrate or re-identify with, because we have been left with these changes. And I also want to really highlight the factor here that it's not that we're not grateful. Oh my God, this was the guilt that I felt, to not be able to say that I was struggling, or I was confused, or that I was feeling anything other than on top of the world, was because I felt that people would think, why isn't she grateful that she's alive when so many other people would literally give their lives to be in her position? And that is not what we're saying. We are, I'm going to call it, probably the most grateful people out there. one of the most grateful people out there, because we have been through a life or death situation and we are very grateful and fortunate to be able to be here and surviving. But it's not that we're not grateful or happy or over the moon or joyful that this happened. It's the fact that there are so many other things that come with that. We are human. We have all these emotions. We don't just have the just think positively and the good vibes only. We have all of the things that we have to work through. And knowing that's okay, and knowing that there's support there, and knowing that other young adults feel exactly the same, you are not alone, was the biggest difference. When I first heard that this was a thing, I was like, Thank God I'm not going mad. Thank God I'm not just losing my mind, and that this is actually something that we can get support with and that we can support others with as well.
Mm. It's so huge. I mean, I had no idea before I got cancer that this was going to be a thing. And yeah, I already had trauma that I had been processing. My listeners will know I'd been through some really tough years leading up to my cancer diagnosis. And so that was another kind of thing to deal with and think, are you serious? Like, now, after everything?
Really, universe? Have I not been strong enough?
Yeah. And so it was kind of like, how on earth do I navigate this? And I, you know, it has taken me a little while to figure out, where do you find this information and what do you do? And if you already have trauma or grief or losses and that sort of thing, they're likely to be compounded by a cancer diagnosis. And so you come out of it going, what am I sad about today? Is it this thing? Am I sad because I don't look like I did before? It's just, there are so many layers to it. And then add on top of that of, oh yeah, you survived, you're a warrior and all of these things. I would not wish cancer upon anyone. And I have said before that, if I could, I would wish that this had never happened. Like I don't believe that, oh, this has happened and this is the way things were meant to be and all of that sort of thing. I think if it hadn't happened, life would have unfolded in a different way. It hasn't. And so now it's like, well, how do I cope with this so it doesn't destroy me mentally?
Yeah. And sort of what we were talking about a little bit before as well, in the sense of what I talk about in survivorship and particularly around mental health in survivorship is it's not about glittering a turd. It's not about saying, I'm so glad I got cancer. It's the best thing to ever happen to me. If people hear me speak, like I do public speaking, I quite often say it was the best and the worst thing to happen to me, because I believe that I'm still not grateful for the trauma. And this is the sort of the key distinction that I've made for myself in my mental health, is I'm not grateful for it. However, I have found a lot of meaning from it. I have found a lot of myself in this sort of rebuild phase. And I literally refer to myself as a blank slate. I was bald, blank, everything from head to toe. And I have really learned a lot about myself and my identity and who I want to be, what I want to do, all of these things that I was never really thinking about in my 20s. It wasn't really crossing my mind. So there's definitely an aspect that I feel it's brought some wonderful positivity. And I reference a lot of the post-traumatic growth research that we were talking about, but it's not glittering a turd. It's not say this is the most wonderful thing ever. Everything happens for a reason. I hate that stuff. I've got to ask you a question. I know this is the wrong way around, but bear with me here. Before your diagnosis, had you ever heard of the term toxic positivity?
Maybe.
See, yeah. I don't think I'd ever heard of it referenced like that before. And then after my diagnosis, when all the toxic positivity came out, every angle, right and centre, I was like, oh, well. And I'm really interested in, I mean, my background is psychology anyway, so people have always interested me, but it really interests me in survivorship, how others interact with survivors as well, but also the level of understanding of mental health, the level of understanding of empathy, of what to say to people when they're going through what could be the hardest time of their lives. People panic and they don't know what to say, so they end up saying, just think positively, you'll be fine, see you later, bye. And you're left standing there going, I am actually a pretty positive person. This is just really lit. And it's being able to call it for what it is and then learn what to do with that. It's not brushing it under the carpet, pretending it doesn't happen. It's calling it out. It's saying, yeah, I am being positive. I am doing everything I can for my mental health. But this is still shit. What I'm going through is still hard. And what I'm trying to deal with here is massive. So let's not boil that down to just think positively, because that's not going to solve the world, mate.
Yeah. And it's such an important point to make, I think. And it's something that I've been exploring a lot. And I think for me, the podcast really was a way to figure out, well, how the hell do we do this? How have other people done it?
Help me. It's out there. Yeah, totally.
And it's me. It's a fascinating thing for me is I have spoken to a few people who would describe themselves as optimistic. They were prior to cancer, they were during and all those sorts of things. And I think there's this thing that we don't realize is that it's not that those people think, right, I'm just going to think positively and it's going to be great and I'm going to, they actually hold both. They're like, yeah, I had really crap days and I was angry and I was this and that, but they could also hold that other stuff. And I think that's the missing piece for a lot of people, is you can hold both at the same time. You can have joyful moments and you can be in despair. You can be like, yeah, I'm really grateful that I have access to the treatment that I need, but I don't love that I'm doing it. And I don't love that I, you know, am bald head to toe and have chronic reflux. No one's grateful for that.
I'm going to call a turd a turd.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah. And I think that's the important little switch, is that, it's allowing people to be wherever they are and not feeling the need to fix it.
Oh, that's the biggest thing. Having someone listen, like actually just listen to you and not feel the need to fix it or find a solution or make everything okay again, is one of the biggest learnings I found come out of this, because it is the difference between somebody feeling heard and actually heard and understood, yeah, as opposed to somebody feeling like they're broken and needing fixing.
Yeah, absolutely. And to, it's a, yeah. And to be honest, I think if I do think of the gifts the cancer has given, but I think one of the things has been, it has actually allowed me or forced me, I don't know what the right word is, to actually, really decide that I'm going to face some of this stuff. You know, at the moment I'm doing a lot of grief work and mm-hmm. it's uncomfortable and I don't enjoy it. but I think cancer was a wake-up call, and it was this time where I could go, holy shit, I have not been listening to my body. I have a lot of relationships in my life that aren't serving me. What do I do now? And it really was this time where I learned to be ruthless and go, I don't have time for that now.
Yep.
Yeah.
When time is taken away from you, it's a real, I often describe it, you know, that Back to the Future movie where you get catapulted into your future of, oh my God, I really want to do all these things, but oh my God, I might not have time to do these things. So if my time is limited, where am I going to focus my time and my energy? And it becomes a real clarity pill because you don't have time for any of the, the shit that doesn't matter. It really, so I was saying to somebody the other day, I'm far more less confrontation, not that I ever was beforehand. I don't enjoy confrontation at all, but it's because I just give less fucks about stuff. I really do. Like it's the things that matter and the things that don't become really clear. Not overnight. As I say, this is a few years out. This is a lot of work and a lot of muddling through a lot of different support. And that's one of the things that I'm really passionate about talking and trying to change through my advocacy work is becoming more holistic in our survivorship support, i.e. the cancer community or the sort of medical model that we have, particularly in Australia. And I don't want to generalize, but I have had conversations with people in different parts of the world who feel similarly, is that it's non-inclusive. It's not inclusive of young people. And it's also very antiquated. It's very much a disease physical model, which, yes, we know. Obviously, the cancer is in our bodies. And, yes, it is a disease reduction model, i.e. to go through the treatment and then to go out the other side and you are treated, you move on. But there is that missing link for holistic support. And I don't mean, some people hear the word holistic and think, oh, spiritual woo-woo, and I don't mean that. That spirituality can by all means be part of it if you choose, but holistic is more, or humanistic as I refer to it, it's the whole parts of the human. And we were talking about it earlier, the people that manage to integrate the fact that we are human beings with all sorts of emotions that come out of this these events, and it's not just the good ones, it's the, I don't even like referring to them as good and bad, but it's the challenging ones as well, and being able to hold them both in the same space, but to be able to find the support, we even know where to look or ask. And as I say, psychology background, massive advocate for counselling psychology, absolutely. I think it is absolutely, for some people, a godsend in that space to have somebody to talk to about their mental health in around this. But there are other ways too. I talk about the cancer community being, or the cancer model, the medical model being quite antiquated and non-inclusive because, like you say, all of the survivorship material says do yoga, meditate and eat more kale. And I give kale quite a hard time.
I hate like kale. Really. It is so disgusting.
See, I don't mind it, but I just don't want it in my chemo IV. I don't know why they keep telling me to put it in my chemo. Or but turmeric. Anyway. But the truth of the matter is that with young adult cancer patients, generally, they're quite aware of their diet. They are more aware than the older generation in that respect. They are, like, I love it when people say to me, eat less meat. And I'm like, yeah, mate, I've been a vegetarian since I was 5. I'm good with that. Or give up smoking. I'm like, I don't smoke. Like, and my cancer has nothing to do with smoking. Like, all those sorts of quite performative or generalistic survivorship support models are just, they're outdated and a bit quick downward dog in a cow smoothie ain't going to fix half this shit. Like, it's just not. And you've just got to find what works for you, which again, is really hard to then quantify into some kind of support method because everybody is different. But the age old do yoga, meditate and drink kale smoothies is just not suitable for I'm going to call it 90% of the cancer patients that get to survivorship stage, particularly in the young adult stages.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point to make. And I, this is going to be a little, I need to give context to this. So I, before I got cancer, so I was diagnosed in 2018. And the years leading up, I had lost a lot of weight because I've been a bigger woman for my adult life. And so I've yo-yo dieted because you can't be fat. And so I had a really bad back problem. The surgeon said, you need to lose weight. And so I dutifully went up and lost weight. So I, when I got cancer, I was a lot smaller than I am now. I was a very regular exerciser. I hadn't drunk alcohol in about a decade. I did smoke as a young person, so I don't know, maybe you can put it to that. Yeah, and so I was active. I really looked after my diet. I was very aware of my diet, but I have been under a huge amount of stress, like so much stress in the years leading up to it. And, you know, there are other factors there. And so for me, it really frustrates me when people go, you need to do this diet or you need to do this exercise or, oh, I was really active before I got cancer, so it's been easy for me. And it's like, so was I.
Mm.
Yeah. Like I boxed 5 times a week. Like I trained and I did all this stuff. And so I really think that point is really important because it is so much bigger than that. And we are often younger people who are running households. We might have children. We might have a career. And so it is, yeah, it can be a lot harder to invest in all of those things that we're told is going to be really important. I used to get huge anxiety that I wasn't eating properly in that year after and was so worried that if I ate certain things that the cancer was going to come back, you know, which is just, I was doing the best that I could as someone that was trying to rebuild after cancer. Like,
yeah,
I was doing
that. And I think you've touched on it really though around the fear and the anxiety, because there is a lot of fear in survivorship. And the fear, yes, of recurrence is the biggest one that I come up with my group when they're talking about what's the biggest fear in survivorship. They say, is it going to come back? How long have I got? Do I have a future? Those are really big questions. And they are really impactful questions on individuals, but also their families, their friends, everything. But that anxiety that you talk about around food and around the fears around, am I doing enough or am I doing this right? What am I doing to my body? All those things that, whilst with the right support, yes, of course, we know that as a human being, cancer or not, we need fuel, we need sleep, we need movement, we need all those things. And we are doing the best that we can with what we have available. Sometimes there's a bit of a shame and blame model that comes into wellness. And I know, and I'd never noticed it before until I was on the receiving end of it. And then I was like, that's just making me feel shame. And actually, there's no shame to be had here. So I'm not going to feel shame, but I had to get really strong with myself around that because I was very interested in the wellness movement. Because when you come out of illness, you think that, okay, survivorship, I've got no idea what I'm doing here. So illness, antidote must be wellness. I'll have a look into wellness.
Yeah.
Why not?
And what a shit storm that is.
Oh, good Lord. That's one crazy barrel of fish.
Yeah.
Like, God, the wellness industry in itself. Yeah, that's a whole different podcast. That's a whole new series, mate. But the shame and blame that comes around some of the survivorship is, it's really interesting. And that's where I have a lot of conversations around, again, toxic positivity in the wellness industry is huge. But also with friends and family that said to me, am I doing that? Am I being toxically positive? And I'm like, no, this is not me calling you out individually. This is me calling out the wellness industry saying you're not inclusive. There's no shame or blame tactics. And I've referenced it before that the wellness industry is becoming the new sneaky diet culture. It's totally the same flavor, if you will, in parts. And again, I want to reiterate the fact that I'm a firm believer and you've got to sort the shit from the legit. There are some really legit industries or wellness people out there who are fucking fantastic, and they will make a big difference in the wellness industry. And then there's a lot of shit, which is the same for any industry, but that's just where we're talking about right now. The wellness industry is a bit of a minefield, and it's a particular minefield when you are a young adult cancer survivor looking for wellness or looking for looking for how do I recover, how do I regroup, and you go into some of these wellness circles or these wellness workshops or whatever, and you're being told things that don't resonate or feel like you should be shameful of what's happened to you, or you are to be blamed, like everything happens has been happening for you. And I'm like, no, cancer didn't happen for me. Cancer happened to me, and I will stand firm by that. I use my language in other ways. I use my language and my mindset to make it applicable to my experience and my certain situations, but it can be a real slippery slope for people looking for support and looking to rebuild or reconnect or improve the wellness in their life. And that's a good thing. Overall, that's a good thing. But it can be a really dangerous industry for shame and blame if you're not looking out for that.
And I think it's because cancer is one of those things, and you touched on it before, where we are often blamed for it. You know, have done something. You must have done something to cause that. There's so many things. And I think that part of that wellness industry is if you put the word cancer in, this prevents cancer, or this lowers your blood pressure and all of these things, is that cancer is so frightening. And I think that we as humans are so obsessed with being in control that we like to try and think that we can beat it somehow, that we can trick it.
And it's human nature. We don't want to believe that sometimes bad things happen to good people.
Oh, absolutely.
For no reason.
Yeah.
That's why the age old everything happens for a reason. Everyone loves that, because it means that there must be something that made that happen. It wasn't just shit luck, you know, a bad thing, whatever you want to frame that up as. But it's the age old, like you say, when people say, well, what caused your cancer? And you're thinking,
division of cells.
If we knew what was causing this shit, we'd be stopping it, but we don't half the time.
Yeah.
But also it's their fear. It's them saying, oh my God, is this going to happen to me?
Yeah.
What did you do that I can do differently so that this doesn't happen to me? And they're not verbalizing that, of course, because they're your friends and they don't want to be fearful. But ultimately, that's what they're asking when they say, what caused your cancer? Or, oh, I know everything happens for a reason. There must be a reason why it happened to you. Like, they're just trying to abate their own little fear monster that, far out, this could happen to anyone. This could happen to me.
Absolutely.
And being on the receiving end of that, sometimes it's tiring. That's why a lot of cancer survivors don't like the term survivor, or don't like the term warrior, or any of those sort of fighter or anything like that, because it's exhausting. Just that language is exhausting.
Yeah.
And some days you just think, nah, I'm just the same as everybody else, and that's just a thing that happened to me in my life.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think that as well, if I think about what healing means to me, and part of it really has been, of course it's been physical, and I'm still dealing with it. I'm about to go back into physiotherapy because I have ongoing pain and things, and I have lymphedema in my arms, and, you know, I've slowly regained a sense of fitness and all of that stuff. But actually, for me, the healing has actually been the hard stuff, is the being open to wading into those revolting feelings. And I had a guest on a while ago who talked, she's a grief counsellor, and I actually ended up doing a session with her, which I highly recommend to anyone, because she talks about the fact that in terms of grief, and I believe that when you have cancer that you will go through a loss or a grief, is that you can't think your way out of all of it. You have to, it is quite a physical thing, and so you will, there will be part of your process that is just, physically letting that out, whether that is, I don't know, through movement or through processing it, through creating something or drawing or painting or expressing it in another way. Because I don't think that there are always words for what we've been through.
Yeah, totally. Or if there are, we don't know what they are because we haven't got to that stage yet. I think I really resonate with what you're saying there, that it's about finding what works for you to work through that. And grief is a really interesting one, like when you talked about grief then. And often, a lot of my research is interested in psychology and the post-traumatic growth, and they talk about post-traumatic stress disorder after a cancer diagnosis. And yes, there is evidence that has increased in numbers throughout cancer survivors, but also not even to the level of a diagnosis of PTSD, but that level of stress and, like you say, the grief that comes with grieving for the life that you had before, grieving for the body that you had before, whether that was you've lost body parts through surgery or whether it's just the physicality of a comfort in a body that hadn't mutated cancer and now you have one that has. It's being able to grieve, or grieve for your fertility, grieve for your loss of relationships, grieve for your loss of career aspirations, or a multitude of, as we've discussed, a multitude of lifestyle changes that come with cancer in young adult patients and some older patients as well. And that acceptance of grief, I found, was a really strange word when I was first in survivorship. I was like, but I'm not grieving, like no one's died. And then I was like, actually, there's so much of my life that has got to a change level of death. It's not there anymore. It's not my life anymore. So I am going to have to grieve some of this. But it's quite an abstract concept when you're first in survivorship. And I think that, again, having a space for survivorship or having a support network or having a support system of what do I do next? What do I explore next? Who do I talk to next? Those sorts of things can just start those conversations. And it might be something that resonates with someone and they go, actually, yeah, that is what I'm feeling, but I couldn't put a word to it because it didn't fit the cancer survivor box. Because so many of them don't, that you're surprised to be feeling these feelings or experiencing these emotions. But when someone talks you through it, be that a counsellor, be that a holistic therapist, be that whoever it is that you talk to in survivorship who has been there or understood what's going on. I'm not sure we all really understand it, but, has experienced it. Sometimes it is just that. It's that, have you considered this? No, but that really sounds like what I'm feeling. It helps just to clarify some of the overwhelm. A lot of what I talk about is survivorship is overwhelming and you feel muddled and jumbled and confused and overwhelmed, and you just want someone to help you start to clarify some of that stuff. Not necessarily tell you to just ignore it and put it in a box, but clarify some of what you're thinking or experiencing to help you make those steps forward.
Yeah. God, yeah. And I feel like this is my next question. We could probably do a whole other episode on it, but I feel like it's a really good segue into it, because fertility is something for both men and women who are younger really have to grapple with, because what I've been through, one failed round of my IVF now. We have two embryos and the first one didn't work, and Jesus Christ, nothing prepares you for that, because I feel like the dialogue around it is always so positive. So, because I'll be 41 in a few weeks, and I'm a 41-year-old woman trying to have a child with a 37-year-old embryo. You know what I mean? I was 37 when I had it. And so actually the stats aren't great. They're not. And I know people want the miracle and they want the, but I feel like for me, actually, what I need to hear is that's really shit. that's actually really shit that you're going through that. And it really isn't spoken about too much. Like those of us who didn't have children at the time and are now facing this stuff, and not everyone's story ends with a miracle. And that's really hard. But I know that you have faced that and you have had a child. So I would love to know more about what your experience was.
Yeah. And one thing that really resonated with me when you were talking there is, quite often when we've been through cancer, people see cancer as our sadness benchmark. If it's not as bad as cancer, we're not allowed to be sad. And I'm like, well, that fucking sucks. A lot of things don't go the way that I was expecting to. But yeah, you're right. They're not as bad as stage 4 cancer, but they're still bad.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes I've had to explain that. I had to explain that to my husband a lot in the early days and my family and friends, by saying that cancer can't be your benchmark now. Like, you can't compare everything bad that happens in the world by saying it's okay because it's not as bad as cancer was. It's not that way. And I people really can't get their head around when I say things like, well, cancer was not the worst thing to happen to me. There's been other shit things in my life. And that's the challenge I think we get. And yeah, I went through escalated fertility preservation, which is called IVM over here, because I didn't have time for IVF. It wasn't covered on our medical insurance. That cost our entire life savings. It also, because it's quite new, it also wasn't particularly successful. We only got one embryo at the time. So going through all of that as well, and just going back a little bit from what you were talking about, like, we do that, all of that really intense emotional processing at a time when we're also processing a cancer diagnosis. I truly believe it's a shit thing to go through at any time, but you've got two really quite monumental life-changing events that you're trying to deal with in a very short amount of time. Half of the time, you were not prepared for it, so you did not have any medical insurance for it. And you're having to make decisions on future fertility that you never even considered would come. Well, to be fair, you didn't consider cancer was coming into your world either, but you're doing these two things at the same time. So you're literally in this state of shock and going, I will do whatever. For me, being told that I had stage 4 cancer was awful. Being told that the treatment to save my life would leave me infertile was worse. For me personally, and my personal experience and my personal aspirations of being mum all my life, and that to me was the hardest side of things. So we went through the treatment. We came out after chemotherapy, and like we've talked about today, survivorship was confusing, and I muddled through for a few more months, and then I got my ovarian levels tested, and I was shocked because I'd had the IVM. I also had Zoladex implants to try and put my ovaries to sleep. So, they're fun, aren't they?
Yeah.
I try and explain to people what the needle in your stomach, I'm like, mate, it's like a knitting needle in your stomach.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, sorry, we digress. Yeah, so I went through everything I could within my power at the time to protect my ovaries with everything I could. Positive visualization while I was going through chemo, green squirrels and tigers. Yeah, it got a bit wild in there for a while. But I did everything I could. And then I came out and I got my levels tested and I was told that there were negligible eggs, so there was no chance. They couldn't find any. And I was heartbroken all over again. But again, this is like, well, at least you're okay. At least you're alive. And yeah, I'm still grateful to be okay. And I'm still grateful to be alive. But I'm allowed to be devastated that my life now looks completely different and I'm left infertile, according to biology at that stage. So I was offered, I couldn't go into IVF because I still had chemo in my system for 12 months. So I had to wait. And we made the decision at that stage through other avenues as well. So I was going through a lot of holistic support, so a lot of acupuncture, a lot of functional medicine, all sorts. So I had so many different things in my toolkit that I was doing at the time that we made the decision that we actually weren't going to go straight into IVF. We were going to try naturally first and just see what happened. We wanted to go on honeymoon and I wasn't ready to go back into IVF straight away. And friends and family, some of them were really scared about that and said, no, you've got to do it now. Like, quicker, you know, got to get in there quick because they're already saying you haven't got anything. Don't wait. Don't give yourself any longer and all this kind of stuff. And I appreciated their concerns and I could understand where they were coming from, but we made that decision that it wasn't right for us right then. We were incredibly fortunate in the sense biologically there's nothing there according to tests, but there was something there somewhere. They're floating around in the universe somewhere. And I am very fortunate to say that I do have a little girl now. She was conceived naturally. And yeah, biologically, there's still negligible egg reserves. So I share her. I do have a lot of toing and froing about talking about fertility and infertility. And somebody said to me, well, why do you talk about infertility when you have a child? And I said, because I was still told I was infertile. I still experience that. I don't still experience it now. It's not part of my story now because I do have a daughter. But it was part of my experience and part of my cancer experience for so many years. And yeah, she is an absolute miracle, and I do share her as a beacon of, I call it irrational hope, because it was completely irrational. If I'd have listened to those statistics sex and listened to that medical report, then there was no hope. There was no chance. There was negligible X. There was nothing there. But she was a beacon of it, completely irrational hope, and it, she is proof that it can happen, but I'm also very mindful of the fact that it's not always that way. And it is a very sensitive space in the cancer community. And it's sometimes you feel, I sometimes feel when I talk about her that it is with some sadness, because I know that that is not the case of everyone. But also I know that when I was going through all that, I was desperate for stories that were the other side, that were people like me now, a few years later on this side, saying, yeah, I was told I had no eggs too. Yeah, I was told they can be my main fertile too. Yes, I have a daughter. No, it's not the same for everyone, but here is one example of irrational hope, because she is completely irrational. She's a toddler. She's very irrational. But she is hope. She is hope to me, and she is proof to me that she is hope, because, yeah, medically, negligible. There's nothing there. But it is a really challenging space, especially for young adults. And so many, do you know what, I'd say 99.9% of people, when I talk about this or when I talk about cancer and infertility, they have no idea. Because generally the people that they have experienced with cancer in their life are older, they've already had kids, or they didn't want kids. And that's their choice, it's what it has been. So they are shocked that this is one of the major side effects that come out of treatment for cancer, is infertility or fertility challenges from the treatment itself.
I think it is one of the many things people don't understand about young survivorship, and yeah, just how painful that part is. Because I was on Zoladex too as a preservation. I was lucky that my cycle, for some reason, it were the gods aligned, and I was able to have a cycle of IVF. And thankfully in New Zealand, it was covered by the public system, because I was under 40 and hadn't had children yet. I know a lot of women don't have that experience as they have a child. And yeah, that's not everyone's experience. And then I was put on Zoladex to, you know, maybe preserve things. I don't know if it did preserve things. And part of me thinks, did I go into a bloody chemical menopause for nothing?
Were those hot flashes just for shits and giggles? Because they weren't complete awesome shits.
Was that for nothing? Because that was really quite awful. But yeah, we could do a whole other episode on it, because I think it is one of the most challenging things. And yeah, yes, cancer has been challenging for so many reasons. But I also think that infancy, like a pregnancy loss or an IVF round not working, has also been probably one of the most painful things that I've gone through. And it's really interesting, because it seems like men and women react to it quite differently. And I think when it's your body going through it, the experience is so different than what it is for your partner. Yeah, I just don't even know if I can go through it again, to be honest. And that's the point we're at. And I think that's one of the tragedies of cancer, is to go, have I had enough trauma and grief in my life, or do we try this one more time?
Am I ready?
Just add to it.
Yeah. What should we do next? But I think you touched on it earlier, and it is doing what you can with the information you have available at the time and making the best decision for you. And whether that, like we say, is Zoladex, because that was the opportunity we had at the time and we took it because we had that opportunity and we wanted to make that choice. And what you're going through now, this is the information I have available to me right now. Is it the choice I want to make? And it's so hard. It is really hard. And it's like we're talking about, your cancer is not the benchmark for trauma. It's, there are still many, many traumatic things that we go through in life, and that's life. Like, I've got a lot to say about Hollywood movies and cancer, but particularly what pisses me off most is the, you know, after cancer, you ride off into the sunset, you sell all your worldly possessions, you travel the world, and you never have a worry again in your life. It's not. It's really not. There, as I say, there are some wonderful things to come out of life, and survivorship is phenomenal in so many ways. It's amazing, but it's that being able to hold both being able to hold both spaces of that experience where it's also got its challenges in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Vicky, it's just been so good to talk to you, and I feel like I could go on and on and talk for hours. But nobody who's going to listen to a 3-hour podcast.
Just the extended version, go for 3 days.
Yeah.
Settle in love, we're here.
Yeah. So thank you for joining me and sharing your amazing wisdom and your story. I think people will get so much out of it.
Thank you. And thank you for opening these conversations up. I always say this, but on podcasts or articles or even just speaking to people, just having a space to share stories about real lived experience is so valuable. So thank you. Thank you for creating that space as well.
Thanks so much for listening. The C Word is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM. And anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/thecword.